and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Christmas Spectacular podcast. My name is James, still a bit ill, but better than he was, Gilmore. And joining me today is Mary Emily Soden.
Hi.
And joining us for what will be his final appearance on the Pocket Gamer podcast is Glenn Fox.
Ho, ho, ho.
What's this all about, Glenn? What is it? Something I said? One of the various things that I said to you that was really insulting?
Yeah, sorry, James. It's like all down to you. It's the reason I'm leaving. I just couldn't handle the sexiness of your voice anymore.
Oh man,
it's too much, James. It's too much. Nah, it's not that. It's just you know, there comes a time, I guess, to try something new, and I've reached that stage in my life where I kind of want to you know, move on into console journalism, mostly. Ooh. Because I bloody love that Switch, don't I?
Yeah, this is the problem. We're going to be talking about this in a second. The Switch has now bridged that gap and all, and yeah, you're all Switch crazy. And it's always been kind of a specialism of yours, as in Nintendo has always been quite close to your heart, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I was obsessed with Nintendo from the GameCube era, which I know is not that long ago for a lot of our readers and listeners, but for me, that was like, this wasn't my first console, it was my second ever console, and I was only about 12 when I got it, so it was a big deal at the time. And I know this is a boring story, but I just remember seeing Super Mario Sunshine on the TV in like an advert, and I just remember thinking, I have to have that game in my life, so I'm going to buy the Nintendo system just for that. And haven't looked back since.
And so you're going to head off, and we're not going to name the place yet, are we? You can, if you
I
should
think,
follow,
yeah,
then.
Think it's,
oh, you can?
It's okay, actually, I can talk about it. It's all official now, so yeah, I'm going to be moving on to Nintendo Life to be their guides editor. It's nothing against Pocket Gamer, honestly. I loved working in mobile for all the years I did, but this is how great the Switch is, that someone has like literally left a job they love to do another one just so they can work with it like, even closer.
Pure, uncut, full Switch.
Yeah, basically.
Well, that is, we're obviously incredibly sad to lose you, because it's been ages. I was here when you turned up, and now you're running away and leaving me. So it's obviously very sad, but it's always good when you're going off to pursue a specific passion thing, and you're not like you're leaving the world of writing about games or anything like that.
No, so, of course not.
People should all go, if you're listeners, you should all go and find Glenn, old Foxy Glenn, as it is, the Twitter handle, at Foxy Glenn, and follow his future exploits, just especially if you have a Switch.
And just to reassure you, I did just buy a new iPad, so I'm not leaving mobile behind. I'm still going to be playing the games, all of the games.
Oh, good. I was worried for a second.
I thought you might be.
Good stuff. Well, Emily, you're not abandoning me as well, are you?
No, you guys are stuck with me for a while yet. Sorry about that.
Whew, my goodness. Good stuff. All right, then. Well, with that out of the way, we're going to be discussing, as we promised a few podcasts ago, our favourite games of 2017. We're all going to have our top threes. We've got them in a list. We've discussed them beforehand. We're going to reel them out to you. But before we get to that, we want to just discuss a few of the highlights of 2017 and what the year has been like for mobile and gaming in general. And we've kind of already touched on it. One of the big things we've all decided that happened this year was Nintendo wading 2 big feet into mobile, not just in iPhones and iPads and Android touchscreen form, but also with the Switch. And it really has shaken things up quite a bit, to the point where you're changing a job. But also, focusing on the Switch just first, it was, do you remember all the talk beforehand about how much of an unknown quantity it was?
I remember all of it, yeah. I remember all of the skepticism. I remember all of the, you know, quiet hopes of everyone. But I just had a feeling Nintendo was onto something. Because the rumor from the very start was that it was going to be some kind of hybrid console. There was no real argument about that, was there?
The rumors for ages was like, they're going to try and do the thing where you can play it at home and then stick some controls on the side and play it on the go. That was what was talked about for ages.
There were lots of bizarre rumors, like people saying, oh, it's going to be an Android device or you know, something like that. And I think for me, I thought the thing it was going to closely resemble was what Nvidia's been doing with the Shield. And it kind of did, I guess. With that system, you have to just get a mini HDMI to HDMI, plug it into your TV, and then you've got a system that you can play on the go or in your home. It's quite a similar setup. But obviously Nintendo's made it even easier than that and just plonk it into a dock.
and it's got them sweet Nintendo games. And so all the discussion happened. They launched the trailers and it was all like, oh, I don't know if it's going to work. And those controllers look a bit small. And is it going to, are they going to break off the side when you're holding them? Is it going to really work? Is it going to look terrible on a big TV? And lots of people said Nintendo was absolutely mental and that this was going to be their final console because it would potentially tank in the same way that the Wii U did. They needed a hit after the Wii U failed. And so people were very like, this could be it. And lo, I think the projections were 5 million to sell in the first year. They've sold 10 and they're still running out at this point. And it's been just this astonishing hit, not just from a consumer perspective, but also from like a critical perspective. Everyone I know, basically, I can't find anyone who's said significantly bad things about the Switch. Like you've both got them. You've enjoyed the time you spent. Em, you've been playing your way through. Well, you've been doing lots of reviews for the site as well, haven't you?
I have. Do you know, I wanted to hate the Switch so much.
Why?
I really wanted to. It was such a hype, and it was just like, oh, everyone... I don't know, I just wasn't convinced by it, and you know me, like, I'm a PC and, like, console girl, as in, like, you know, PlayStation girl. And I was just like, no, I can't get on with Nintendo. Like, we've had some times together, but I've never gotten on. Like, I don't, like, really like their games and things like that. And then the Switch came in and just destroyed my life, man.
Or made it better.
It ruined me because now I'm positive and enthusiastic.
Oh, and this is massively off-brand for you.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, for Nintendo stuff, like I never liked Nintendo before this.
That's mad.
I know, we've had loads of conversations about this, but like, you know, I still haven't got over it.
Oh God, sorry.
So what? I grew up with, you know, games like Golden Axe and...
Don't say it.
Sonic.
Games for grown-ups.
Don't, oh
yeah.
God.
Yeah, there it is. No, the personal highlight of Glenn for 2017 there. Fond memory you'll take with you into the future decade of...
Never again.
I remember that Sonic review I did? Where I said Sonic Mania was all right.
I have no idea what you're talking about. God.
Yeah, you do. By the way, I'm not editing this podcast. Listeners, if you're wondering why there's no jingles and no anything, it's because we're recording this like at the end of the Friday and my voice is broken and there's no time. So this is going to be the unedited chatter. So if you happen to hear things like... then it's staying in. I'm sorry. That's the way that it is. The way that they managed to make it work, I think exceeded everyone's expectations, including Nintendo's, who are scrabbling to produce more stock to get out. And I think for the first time, they've really nailed the whole third-party integration thing as well. Getting all the ports.
Yeah, it might be a bit hasty, but yeah, definitely the signs are, you know, it's looking positive. I think there's still work to be done. I think 2018 is really going to show us whether, you know, third-party developers are really taking to it.
But things like, I'm thinking like getting all the indies on there, like getting your Oxenfree's and, you know, little games that can fit touchscreen as well as they fit, you know, console stuff or PC. And everyone's just said it's as soon as you start playing it, you kind of and put it down and pick it up again and then unplug it from the dock and put it in your bag and take it with you. It's just like, oh, hang on, this is actually brilliant.
I've just written a piece about the Switch for Pocket Gamer, but it's going live over Christmas. So you can't go and read it. Well, you might be able to read it now if you're listening after Christmas, but basically I just go through the reasons why I think the Switch is like the biggest threat to mobile yet, because I think that's the real enemy. The people who are going to be most worried about Switch is going to be mobile developers, because console does something completely different. Like, if you want to go out and play the best looking games running in the smoothest way, you're going to want to get like a PS4 Pro or an Xbox One X and do a 4K TV thing. Like, the Switch doesn't offer that. And I don't know how you'd feel, James, but like, there's been times where I've plugged my Switch into my TV and I've went, this looks a bit naff compared to the whole PS4 Pro.
Well, so. I mean, I guess I expect Nintendo games to look worse. And I don't mean worse in terms of the art design. I mean, I expect them to be lower resolution. There's never been an instance where a Nintendo console, to my knowledge, has been like more powerful than its competitors in the same generation. Because
the GameCube was.
More powerful than a
PS2. Yeah, I can't remember. I don't know if it was either equally as powerful or maybe slightly more. I can't remember.
Maybe, but generally speaking, their cycle is offset slightly, and they've always been about experience rather than graphical fidelity.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Wii was, you know, 480 or whatever, and then you end up with the Wii U, which can sort of just about, it can do 720, it can just about manage 1080, but barely ever. And this one, the Switch, is 720, generally speaking. You can get it running 1080 when it's docked. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, yeah, everything gets a graphical step down. But it's not about the resolution. It's about those games and that look and the way that they present the art rather than how many pixels the art has in it.
Exactly.
And that's what's important. So, yeah, good year for Nintendo. Plus, there was the other thing, which is they properly broke into mobile this year. So even though Super Mario Run was the end of 2016, it was December, that came out, and they're finding their feet here. So it was actually, wasn't it the most downloaded thing on Android, as it turned out?
Which one?
I thought I saw a stat. Super Mario Run.
Really? I'm not surprised.
Yeah, it was the most downloaded premium game on Android.
Oh.
You know, people found it and were like, oh, I'll play the first few levels and then I have to pay, and maybe they didn't pay in the end. But that was one approach they did, the kind of premium thing. Then they did the Fire Emblem game, which was the full free-to-play. And then they followed that up with, what's the most recent one? Oh, Animal Crossing. So the Pocket Camp came out, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
And so they've been making proper headway into mobile as well. The thing they said would never happen happened big time. So been a good year for Nintendo, and it's interesting that they've now properly crossed over into our camp, if you like. Because we could always talk about the 3DS a bit, but that was kind of it. But now they factor into our whole mobile umbrella that much more. And I'm excited to see what they come up with next. The other stuff that we had was the usual things. So, new iPhone appeared. And I think of all the iPhone launches I've seen in the past few years, we've been a part of, it was the weirdest one.
Yeah, that's fair.
Do you know what I think? Because it had that, we're going to do the 10th anniversary, we're going to do the revolutionary thing, we're going to remove the buttons, it's going to be a whole big deal. And the reaction, because usually the reaction is just kind of like, oh, it's a new phone, it's got a couple of new things, a whole bunch of people will buy it, and it'll, you know, queues around the block, it'll all sell out, standard stuff. This one, they made a big song and dance over the new features, and the feedback was very like, about it, where everyone likes, like, is this, do I want, I quite like having a button. And it's a lot of money, £1,000 for the...
You can buy a MacBook for that.
Yeah, I think this is the one where people kind of went, I'm not sure I'm going with that. And they made the iPhone 8, the normal, you know, range one, the standard update, look kind of dull in comparison and perhaps not as enticing, especially at the, you know, £700 price point, by releasing, but you really want the X, not this crappy £700 one. And then they made that £1,000. I was like, well, I'm not going to pay that for that. So, I don't know. This is the one, yeah, it felt to me like the whole thing went a bit weird.
Yeah, Apple seems a little bit lost, to be honest. Like, I mean, they're in a difficult position where they want to cater to a bunch of different markets. Like, if you go on the Apple Store these days, you'll see that they've got, like, the entry-level products, which is generally quite cheap, like the SE and the regular iPad. And then you've got, like, pro options and these other generally weird options. Like, I don't really know what the difference between the MacBook is and the MacBook Pro and the MacBook Air. Like, I know there's some differences, but they're not quite as profound as they are over on iOS, like on iPhone and iPad. So they want to cater to both ends, but they've always been the high-end product. And it's kind of difficult now because their high-end has to be super expensive because we're living in a really expensive world right now. And then the low end,
especially
also
in the UK,
yeah, exactly. And the low end doesn't make much sense with an Apple product because every Apple product is high end, isn't it? So
the thing is, the low end stuff, the cheap option isn't that cheap. So it feels like you're paying a lot for the lowest, cheapest option, and you know, it doesn't feel premier anymore. And the whole idea of the Apple thing was like, these are all premier devices. And back in the day, there was just one. There was one iPad and there was one iPhone model, and that was it. You knew what you were getting, and you paid the premium for it, and you knew that was the best that was available. But now there's, with all the tiers that they've introduced, all the way from iPad minis and the iPhone SEs, and then you'll have the SE, you'll have the 8, you'll have the 8 Plus or 8S, you'll have the X. And then iPads have had a similar kind of, you know, collection of different ones, and it's just become that much more confused and more like Android, more fractured and fragmented.
Yeah. I mean, I like it in a way because The thing I find confusing most about it is like who's the middle tier aimed at? Because you're either I want the most, you know, cost efficient, or I want the best. But what's the middle ground? Because it's like in between those two price points.
The middle ground is for the people who order the second wine on the menu.
Oh, okay. I like that.
Because, you know, you don't want to order the cheapest one, but at the same time, I'm not paying £50 for a so yeah. you hit that sweet middle ground, so that you're like, and I'm not entirely without class, but yeah, at the same time, I did leave my Learjet at home.
See, I just recently got the SE and the just standard iPad, which is actually the lower end. Because the iPad mini costs more than the standard iPad now.
Yes, it's
crazy. Because they've included, like, you have to get 128 gigabytes of storage, which is, that is a move I don't understand. And also the iPad mini 4, which is the latest, doesn't have the same chip as the regular iPad. That is the A9, whereas I think the iPad mini 4 has the A8X.
Yeah.
And there's actually quite a considerable difference between those two. Like, I've noticed that any phone running anything below the A9 chip just generally struggles with everything.
Yep. A8X, I think that's what my iPad runs, the Air 2. Yeah. That's the Air 2 chip, that is.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. And it's kind of generally, it's not terrible, but it's noticeably struggling a little bit. Whereas the A9 has still got probably at least a year in it before it starts to do the same.
Mm. You're considering upgrading your iPad, aren't you, Em?
Yeah, no, it's kind of getting to the point now where it's taken a couple of seconds to kind of register what I've done. And it's starting to get a bit jittery. Like when I turn it off, it doesn't turn off straight away, and it's kind of, you know, the screens don't swipe as young and sprightly as they used to.
Well, we've had that thing recently that was launched this week where people were talking about Apple admitting that they slow down older devices.
Yeah, that's terrible.
That's so cheeky, because not everyone can afford a newer device. Like when I was choosing between my Galaxy S 7 Edge last year and between the iPhone 7, I kind of looked at it, I was like, it's £600, man.
Yep.
Isn't it a little bit illegal as well to do that?
Yeah, because you're forcing consumers onwards. I think they've disguised it with some fancy language.
Haven't they said that it's because they're trying to protect the battery? That's the excuse that I heard, that trying to run the latest versions of iOS or stuff put such a strain on the battery. The idea is that they slow down the processes so that it doesn't cook the battery doing it. That's their argument. As the battery starts to deteriorate. That's what I think. That's what I read briefly somewhere. It sounds a bit airy-fairy to me, but you know, I don't know. But it was something that was kind of a bit of an open secret anyway. I think we all felt like, obviously, they are doing this because we've all used devices to the point where they just start getting really slow.
Mm.
And even if you do a factory reset, they still come back really slow. So you're like, well, something's up here.
Mm. Yeah, of course. And I suppose since they're not, I mean, after the iPhone 10, they're not really doing any more iPhones, are they?
No more iPhones.
I thought that was the whole thing, is that the iPhone 10 was like the ultimate phone.
No, they'll keep.
Kind of...
And then they're going to start making what, like toilet seat covers?
No, no, like they were going to go to like different sorts of phones or something. I don't know. Maybe I just didn't imagine that. It's happened before.
They're definitely not. They're definitely not giving up anytime soon. They're going to keep trying.
They'll
to
work
innovate.
through the alphabet. We'll move on to the J phone, like the USS Enterprise. They'll just keep renaming it with a different letter at the top.
They'll do the see-through phone. They'll do the phone that's like as thin as a blade of glass and call it like iPhone Glass. iPhone Grass, not glass. They'll just keep doing crazy stuff.
That's Google. Google had glass, and that didn't work. Yeah, where did that go? Apparently, people don't like it when you're wandering around with a camera trained on them at all times in public. Honey, that's a bit unsettling. Slightly odd one for Apple there this year, but a cracking one for the Switches. But the reason you're probably here, if you're listening at all, is the games. It was a good year for games, I'm going to say, broad statement, because I did have some trouble whittling down my top two, three, because there were other ones I could have mentioned. Now, I've imposed a rule on myself, which is my top three is just mobile games that were released either on mobile at the same time they were released on other platforms, or just exclusively mobile. So no ports. I'm not dealing with things that were brought to mobile like 5 months later or something like that. That was my own rule. That doesn't apply to you guys. And as well, you both have Switches, so your lists may differ from mine. Because, you know, there was a couple of games that people quite liked on the Switch.
wasn't there? I genuinely thought our list was supposed to be mobile only, so I get my, yeah, my
oh, no,
Switch
I
games off
I blew the rule book out there. I was like, do you know what? Screw you guys. Screw your hypocrisy.
Yeah, you ruined it.
Sorry. It's good. We'll bring some different colours to it. So let's go around a couple of honourable mentions first, because I know people had like five on their list. What are the ones that there's one or two that didn't make onto your list, Glenn?
Okay, so first up was Fire Emblem Heroes. It was in my top five, but didn't quite squeeze into the top three, mostly because I don't think I played it quite as much as the other ones. But what I really liked about Fire Emblem Heroes was sort of two things. I liked how they squeezed the, you know, standard Fire Emblem gameplay into that single screen experience. So it was like 4x7, I think, grid.
Mm-hmm.
And the battles were just like super short, 30 second to a minute affairs, but they really captured Fire Emblem and what was great about it. And that was all down to like keeping the rock, paper, scissors system and the various other systems in place. So each level actually kind of felt like a puzzle, because you were trying to figure out where to place your units in the starting position, where to move them, where to make sure they would do the most damage without getting killed. And it was impressive that it was all sort of like procedurally generated, so that you know the game could effectively throw infinite puzzle based levels at you. And it was cool.
Nice.
And also Nintendo kind of perfected their mobile approach with that one, because I know there's a lot of negativity towards Super Mario Run's premium model thing, where they charge a lot of money. I don't necessarily think they charge too much, because you effectively did get a proper mobile Mario game. But it, you know, to say it didn't get negative criticism is unfair. So it did. But Fire Emblem Heroes, it worked. The model was freemium, but it was really fair. You didn't ever have to pay. But you know, you could progress a lot faster if you did. So it always felt very balanced to me. And I think it's actually a model that all these other hero collecting games should take a look at, because it just never feels unfair. You never feel like you're missing out. And I really, really appreciated that.
Nice. That is a tricky thing to get right, yeah. You're right. Is there anything that you wanted to put on the list but couldn't, Em?
I would say, you know, good, decent, honourable mention to Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I know, which is a game that someone, like, when I was doing the initial stuff on it, we all looked at it and we were like, really? Is this going to actually work? Because it sounds awful. But upon playing it, and I wasn't like the first person, I didn't pre-order or anything, I was like, you know, I'm going to see how this goes. And then I might dive into it. But like, you know, with the leaked screenshots and things like that, I started thinking, oh, okay, there's something here. And then I think you got it, Glenn, and did the review on it, and you were like, oh my God.
It's great.
Like, oh, damn it, Glenn, damn it. I didn't have the money. So then I splashed out the necessary 40-ish pounds or whatever, plugged it in my Switch on the day. I made myself wait until I got home, because otherwise I would have caused the car crash.
Of course.
And I think I played it for like a solid couple of days, and then like obviously on from there, but like for train journeys and anything like that, it was so weird, but so right.
Yeah.
You know, it was like strawberries and balsamic, milkshake and French fries.
Well, we've just done the review of, I've just done the review because my voice has been broken for a long time, of the Bridge Constructor Portal game on mobile. And that's another one where it's like, those two things, really? But actually, when you play it, it does make sense and it works out really nicely. So sometimes these things can surprise you.
Yeah, see, I love stuff like that, because the world is against you, man. It's like... Everyone is calling your names behind your back and stuff, but then you come through and everyone's like, oh, we're so sorry. It's really good.
You nailed it.
And then they just do the hair flip and then the inspirational music as you walk out the doors.
And the sunglasses fall from the sky and land on your head. Yeah.
Yep.
Nice. Okay. Well, for me, it is... what did I say that I like? Oh, yeah. So Reigns 2, it gets the honourable mention. I really liked it. Great expansion on the first game, building on the ideas. The new female perspective on the whole thing is really interesting. It's much snarkier and drier and sardonic, and the mechanics are more interesting in a narrative sense. Stuff leads on more than it does. It feels less episodic and less just like start and reboot every time there's this thing going in the background. The only reason I haven't put it in the list is because it's a sequel. I think Reigns was in the top list from last year, and you know, it does evolve on it, and it is better than Reigns. I think it's fantastic, but it doesn't have the like completely new idea thing. which a few of the games this year have had. So that gets an honourable mention. And kind of the same with Monument Valley 2, where I think we've all forgotten about it to some degree. It's like, oh yeah, that came out this year. And on any under any normal circumstances and without the first game, we'd be like, my God, this is incredible. But because the first game was such a big cultural thing and everyone went like, whoa, I think that the impact was slightly lessened by the second one, where people went, yep, it's more of that. Cool. It's really good. And they added the extra character, so it does play differently, and it's a very different game, but I think people went, yep, cool, and then moved on quite quickly afterwards, you know? But it was excellent, not quite enough to make the list. Anything else you've missed?
Do you want to go in the same order?
For stuff that doesn't make the list? Yeah, sure.
Yes, okay, well, I'll say Duke Dashington Remastered.
Oh yeah, I remember you mentioning that.
Yeah, I didn't expect to love it as much as I did. I saw it was free, and I quite like Adventure Island, so I was just like, okay, I'll give it a whirl. And I never played the first one, but no, great. It was little tiny condensed puzzle levels where you just basically make a guy fly across the screen in a certain direction, and then he hits something and he stops, and you can change his direction. And they just did loads of smart, clever things with it. And it was actually the only mobile game that I completed this year. And I know lots of mobile games you can't complete because they're just endless, but this one...
Yeah.
I couldn't stop playing it. And then literally after I stopped, I went back and played Heartstar and what's it called? The Tiny Dangerous Dungeons. I just played everything I could find by Adventure Island. So I just fell back in love with the developer because they really, really understand what works on mobile. Like really,
they're very good at doing that thing that they do.
Yes, very good, yeah.
Totally. All right then. Well, let's plow on into the main thing. So, starting with you, Em, what's your number three best game on any mobile-ish platform of 2017?
Okay, my number three is Campfire Cooking.
Now, so this is interesting because A, I never played this one, but I did see trailers of it. And B, I don't think lots of people heard of this, but you really took to it. Why was that then?
Yeah, it's random, isn't it? Like, I could have chosen... anything really, really popular, because there have been some fantastic games. Like you said, Reigns 2 was brilliant. But Campfire Cooking, to me, just stood out from the moment I got the email saying, oh, we've got this game coming out. And I was like, okay, I'll have a look on it. And it's just so, like, simple and so fresh. It's just such a lovely little puzzler. And the stages are short enough to make you be able to complete them in a nice amount of time, but they're not so short that you feel like, you know, it's too easy, because some of the stuff is really hard. But between, like, it's got, you know, the striking visuals of it, it's not overly complicated. I have a cat hair in my mouth. Hang on.
Nice. For people who haven't played it before, it's like a grid puzzler where you're putting food down onto a grid, which is over the top of this campfire, and the idea is to get everything cooking at the right times and for the right length of times and stuff, right? Roughly.
Yeah. I'm doing that thing again, aren't I? I skip over the question. but yeah, no, basically that's that. But it's also got like this tiny little narrative path where you'll do like seven or eight puzzles or however many it is. And then you'll kind of draw back from the campfire to see this family who's kind of just chilling out around the campfire on their weekend camping trip. And they swap like a story. Or they say something like funny to each other, like a brother and a sister. And then it goes back into the puzzler, but sort of bringing you out of that, you know, to kind of experience that little intimate moment kind of makes you feel like you're there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the visuals all work very nicely. It's, you know, contrasting colours between darks and lights and colds and hots and things like that. And not to mention the soundtrack is brilliant on it, you know, makes you feel like you're actually sitting there. You just can't smell the smoke.
Yeah. Now, I remember you mentioning the little incidental narrative stuff. It's like, that's a nice touch. It always helps draw you in a little bit if you've got a more emotional connection rather than just a mechanical one.
Yeah, and it kind of does bum me out that people didn't give it as much of a chance as it deserved, but, you know, not everyone's into the puzzlers, and, you know, it wasn't an awfully long game. I think there's only, like, 100 puzzles on it or something.
Yeah.
But it was just, for what it was, you know, it... sort of threw it out at you and was like, this is what we are, this is what the game is about. If you don't like it, tough titties, mate. And I love that.
I do hope that was a box quote. That's the App Store Pocket Gamer listing quote. 5 out of 5. If you don't like it, tough titties.
I'll change it later.
Nice. All right, then. Campfire cooking there. I'll jump in with my number 3, which is Iron Marines, which was anticipated for so long. We saw this two years before it came out. And it's from the people who did Kingdom Rush and Kingdom Rush Origins and all of that. And they spent 3 games making a tower defense. And then they did this, Iron Marines, which was kind of the same mechanics in terms of hero characters and building towers and upgrading them. But it turned it into a more standard RTS kind of game in a pocket format. Still kept that fantastic cartoony art style that they are notorious for. The upgrade tree system is really, really satisfying when you build a tower and then you level up that bit of the tower and then add another bit onto it and then add the flame bit. And yeah, oh, this is really good. Whilst all the time being under pressure from people coming at you from numerous angles now, because you've got a map that you have to explore and you've got the fog of war, which you have to clear out. So you're not just knowing that with a standard tower defense, it's like, well, they've got 2 lanes and I know they'll be coming from this at some point. This opens it up much more and makes it a little bit more unpredictable. And it was just great. Putting full RTSs onto touchscreen, even though the system, the mechanics work, often RTSs can go on for quite a long time, can't they? Like when you're playing a big game of something, when you used to do Command & Conquer or StarCraft or whatever it is you're doing, they can run for a while. And these ones can too. They're not super short, but they do, again, fit that touchscreen format where things can go on for about 20 minutes or so, maybe, if you're playing a particularly long one. But all the little icons are all perfectly attuned, and it's just great. It's cartoony and it's fun and it's tough. That's the other thing. It's not an easy thing. You can really get your ass handed to you. You can hit about level 6 or 7 and it's like, nope, sorry, get good. And that's nice, frankly, because it just extends the lifespan that much. I've got a friend of mine who's really into the Kingdom Rush games and all of these. And he's literally 100%ed this game on every difficulty mode and everything. Wow. And he doesn't really play loads of games. It's just this one, this kind of series that he absolutely adores. And I found myself spending a lot more time on it than just recording it for the review, you know. And that's always a good sign for me. So Iron Marines gets the nod. Premium, I might add as well. So people tend to like that sort of thing nowadays, don't they? Bit of premium. Always welcome. Yeah. What about you, Glenn? Number 3.
Number 3 is Guns of Boom.
Whoa! Multiplayer.
Yeah, that was a good old game, wasn't it?
It was a good game.
Yeah. People. So I'd say it's the first shooter to make shooters work on mobile. That's my mic drop moment.
But what about modern combat, Glenn?
About it? It's funny because they took a lot of, I don't know whether who got there first, but when I played Modern Combat Versus, I was like, these guys have borrowed a lot from Guns of Boom, but still kind of missed what made Guns of Boom great. And I'm going to tell you now what it is, James.
Go on then.
It's just so goddamn easy to play and pick up. That's the beauty of it. Like, you literally, 2 seconds, and you understand. You point your gun at someone, and it shoots them. Everything is basically done automatically apart from moving, even reloading. But you can do these things manually, but the fact that it just does it for you and you only have to position yourself is the best part about it. And it never feels short on challenge because aiming is pretty difficult. Getting the right position is pretty difficult. But it's just so fun. It just brings back that sort of deathmatch multiplayer sort of mayhem of Unreal Tournament from back in the day. And I just really appreciate it. I played it an awful lot, and it has a great upgrade system as well, where you can get like new hats and costumes and guns and stuff, and it's just very, very addictive, and it's just so fun. It really works. Like, you really feel like you're playing a proper shooter, even though it's just on your phone.
Well, as someone who doesn't really play a lot of multiplayer, especially not multiplayer military shooters, because I find the community's a bit awful, this has much more fun. The only one I did spend a bunch of time playing was Team Fortress 2 when it came out, and I got a PC that could run it, because again, it was fun and cartoony and had a sense of humor, and I liked the different classes that you could play as, and that became, I don't know, that was that bit more entertaining than the serious military Bogies on My 6 stuff that you get. And this one does that really well, as well as for me, the thing that makes it good or that makes it work much better than others is it slows everything down a little bit.
Yeah, actually, so I didn't notice that.
It doesn't run quite as fast. Like, your character doesn't move as fast. And that really helps counter my long-standing problem with getting dual-stick touchscreen controls working.
Mm.
By slowing everybody down a little bit, it just made it feel like I was that much more in control of what was going on.
Yeah,
and
right.
That makes it more satisfying because it feels like you earn your kills rather than just being like frantic, swipey, and hoping it works, you know?
Yeah, and you never feel like the game's killing you. Like, you don't feel like an enemy's just sort of spawned on top of you. There are some very definite spawn, like, spots, which is something I think shooters should bring back generally, but you can't spawn camp because they have, like, such a lengthy invulnerability period that, you always know where someone's going to spawn, but it's more about sort of picking a position where you can, you know, pick them up when they come around the corner or something, like, and they know you're going to be there. Yeah.
So once the invulnerability is worn off, yeah.
Very good map design, I think, as well.
Yes, and didn't take itself too seriously, and it worked. So, I mean, it was one of the more popular reviews on AppSpy, and I think people were like, oh, this is not a serious game, and, you know, doesn't have M16s in it. And I say, well, yeah, it's good in it. It's really actually fun. I would recommend that one as well. It was a good one. So that's free, I think, isn't it? Because you can download,
as you said,
bonuses, and you can get hats and all that business, pay money into it. But yeah, a free game that's worth your time. Cool. All right, then, that's the third place out of the way. So, number two, best of 17. Let's go with them. What's your number two spot?
My number two is also a mobile game, you'll be happy to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the Frostrun.
Oh yeah, I remember you reviewing this. So, big old Celtic point-and-click adventure, right?
Yeah, it's like it's Norse.
Norse, all right.
It's just all Vikings and stuff like that. But, like, you know, that kind of age. Point-and-click, puzzler. That's literally just it. It was a point-and-click puzzler with this kind of branching story of this, like, young boy who found himself sort of stranded on an island, but all of the island's inhabitants had disappeared somewhere.
I see.
But in the wake, it was like there were just sort of evidence of struggle, some bodies, and then this whole the reason that whole tickled me it this massive mythology, like, you know, spirits and gods and goddesses and ghosts and that kind of thing. And you guys know me. So I can't do anything.
You like a bit of world building, a bit of story. That's what you're here for.
I do. But what really, really tickled me about it is that the games focus so much on the time period that everything is correct to its era.
Oh, historically accurate, is it? Yeah,
exactly. It's historically accurate, like the pulley systems and the type of bowls they ate with and all of the pots and their transport and what they believed in and all this sort of stuff. That's what brought it to the next level, you see, because it's attention to detail and accuracy.
Okay. You're like auditing your games for the correct period crockery.
Yeah, exactly. But,
that's what works for M. Developers pay attention.
But it was just, and it's so lovely to look at. Like, that's the other thing, is that it's just so visually magnificent. It was so wonderful to look at.
It is. And, it's all like, everything's like a beautiful background painting, isn't it?
Exactly, and like they've got tiny little details in the scenes, like the water rushes from a waterfall to kind of make the place feel a bit more alive, and you've got the sound effects that aren't overwhelming, but they kind of add to it, and then when you've actually got the music added into it, it's just so haunting, it's lovely, I love it so much.
Just getting all overcome, guys.
I'll stop.
I think there's a video review, I'm not 100% sure, but you can go and have a look at it in trailer form, and obviously read Em's review where she gushes more in text over on PG. But Frostrun, all one word, right?
Yeah, the Frostrun.
Yes, the Frostrun. Okay, there you go. Nice number two. I'm going to go with, sticking with beautiful, gorgeous art doing stuff, a recent one snuck in at the end of the year here, Gorogoa, which is, that one that appeared like last week. And it's one of the games where I was able to play it and go, God, that's awesome. And I played about an hour of it, and then I reset it so I could record the video, so I could start at the beginning, because I didn't want to spoil it for people. And then I played it through for the hour again, and then I was playing it on the sofa, and it's one of the ones where I showed my partner it and was like, check this out. And for me, it's a game that manages to do that crossover interest thing, where even if you're not interested in games, if you're not into like watching numbers go up or grinding for XP or, you know, just doing a million headshots and all that stuff can just turn some people right off the idea of gaming, you know, it's like, oh, you just run around shooting men, this is dull. When you show them what Gorogoa does, when you do that first time where you take an image and it's a picture of someone sitting at a window, looking out the window, and there's a door in a house across the way, so looking across the street and there's a door frame. And then you put your finger on that image, that square, that tile, and you move it and you literally lift the wall around the door out of the picture and you put it down beneath in a bottom tile. And they go, ooh, what's that? And then you lift that door frame over another tile with a little image of a boy just standing in an empty field. And suddenly you've created a doorway in that field and he walks through into the new tile. And then you lift that tile and you take the boy with it and you put it back into that different part of the universe, into the original picture. And it's just like, where? And honestly, my girlfriend just there going, what? Whenever we did a move, because she was getting her head around it. But it immediately communicates its what it does, its mechanics, so beautifully without a single word or text bubble. Not only that, it has a narrative going on throughout. It is telling a story, a really unusual one and quite sad one that plays with time. It's jumping around a timeline. As well as jumping around between these different frames. And I say frames because it actually has a lot of a kind of genetic link to Framed, which also involves the idea of taking pictures that are all next to each other and then reshuffling them so that a character can move from one to the other. So it does that, but it adds that extra layer of separating out an individual tile into component layers and mixing them about. And it's got some amazing mechanical stuff. And as I said before when I was talking about it, it's all about these wow moments, these incredible little, like, oh, when you suss out what it wants you to do and you're like, oh, that's so clever. What? This is amazing. And it's just lovely. It just makes you feel great. And you want to grab people, go, look at this, check this out. This is so cool. And I can't say that for a lot of games because most of them, you'll just show them. And even as you're trying to explain, like, what I'm doing here is I'm trying to chase that enemy down. If I hit him on the glowing bit, they're like, and their eyes are already glazing over. And you're like, yeah, actually, now I hear myself talking about it. This is probably dull to listen to. Whereas this explains itself. It's an incredible thing. Watch the video, which only shows the first, like, 8 minutes of the game. And then the rest is unspoiled for you to go and find. But properly brilliant little thing. So Gorogo is the name of that one. Go check it out. Glenn.
Hi, I'm going to change my order slightly. I know no one else can see it, but yeah.
Remixing on the fly.
Yeah. So I'm going to, for my second one, I'm going to say Tales of the Rays, which you probably haven't heard of, like anybody listening. And
I've heard of it. I did a video of it.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay, so there you go. One person has heard of it.
Which is why I'm smiling, Riley, because isn't this something that you, by your own admission, said isn't very good?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. I think I only gave it like a 6 or a 7 when I reviewed it. I guess I should say, like, that the Tales franchise is my favourite franchise in the world, and my favourite game of all time is Tales of Symphonia, so I'm a little bit biased. But I still think that the way Namco Bandai approached this is good. It's basically like the same way that sort of Nintendo shrunk Super Mario Run and Fire Emblem Heroes and stuff to mobile. Namco Bandai has tried to do that with the Tales franchise. And they took the right approach by sort of focusing on the battle system, which is what Tales is most known for. It's a sort of like a Street Fighter style battle system, but not quite as in-depth in the sense you've got like combos to learn and you fight on a 2D plane. So they focus the experience on that. The vast majority of time, you're sort of in battles, which is the right approach. And the touch controls are very simple. You basically tap the screen to attack, and swipe in four different directions to do a art, which is a skill. And it's really simple, and it feels just as fun as it does in the console games. It looks just as great, and all the stuff around it is pretty decent as well. So there is a story. The main story of the game is terrible, which is kind of...
This is what I remember you saying. It's like, it's just the story's awful. Just Drek.
Yeah, it's just standard free-to-play. crappy story that just tries to justify why all of these characters who live in different universes would come across each other. And it's basically that you open up portals to different worlds. And I can't even begin to describe how bad it is. Like, all the worlds you go to are effectively, apparently, mirror images of the real worlds based on the memories of the character whose world you're visiting. And it's just madness. Wow. And I don't know why they even bothered trying to justify it, because some developers have created games like this and just not bothered, and that would be better. But on a plus side, the characters themselves and their personalities, which again is something the Tales games always get right, they always have great characters, they're intact, and all the characters from previous games feel like they've been written by the same writers and same voice actors, so that is top notch. And it's also kind of cool seeing some of your favorite characters interacting with other ones that would never come across each other. Because you can kind of, when you think about certain characters meeting, you'll go, that person would probably really get on with that person, actually. And then you see them in game actually getting on, or maybe not getting on. And it leads to some really nice moments. And I was kind of surprised by that, because I thought they just wouldn't really bother doing anything. I thought you'd just sort of collect these characters and they wouldn't really interact with each other, and that would be that. But no, they're all, as you add new people to the party, they're all, the game is aware they're all there, so they all can talk to each other at different times. And it's
so you're
really
shipping characters from Vesperia and Symphonia and all of that together.
Yeah, oh, not Symphonia yet. I'm hoping that comes in a later update, but I haven't got any Symphonia characters yet.
Okay. Do you think that it will be enjoyable or mean anything to anyone who isn't already massively invested in the lore?
No, not at all. That's kind of why I only gave it a six. I think it was a six or a seven. It's a solid game for what it is. To be fair to it, I do think that I think that people who don't like the Tales games will definitely enjoy the combat system, because it's objectively good. It's just a great, fun system that's really easy to pick up and quite addictive to, you know, it keeps you coming back. But you're not going to understand. I mean, the plot doesn't make any sense anyway, but if you don't even have a semblance of understanding of the Sales franchise, you're just going to be completely lost. And the characters will just seem really annoying and childish, because you need to understand that sort of their depths to see their true value. And the rest of it.
I'm loving this justification.
I'm trying really
actually,
hard.
They're really deep, actually, but you just don't understand.
Basically. I mean, there's not an awful lot to it as well. Like, you're effectively just going from level to level, where you sort of you run around a very linear level and do battles on your way to a boss, defeat that, and then you move on. It's kind of just, that's all it really is.
That's all it is, yeah. But you get the thrill of the mythos opening up, and
exactly,
you say different characters going, "Oh, it's you from that other game that I'm not a part of." Awesome,
so
high five.
It's basically just fan service. I can't really recommend it to anyone.
That's
who doesn't
what it
know.
Sounds like. Yeah. But that's why this is a personal top five and not the official Pocket Gamer list. Which, by the way, you can find over on PG, where there is a proper actual full top. Is it top 25 or?
Yeah, we're doing a top 25 for just general games to the end. This is our critical opinion, and then we've got these personal ones, which will all also be publicized over Christmas. So just keep an eye out for those. Yeah, but also, one thing I want to say to justify myself is I did play the other Tales game on mobile, Tales of Link, and hated it. It's not just good. So there's something there, is what I'm saying. It's not just blind love
of the property.
Yeah, exactly. It's hitting the right notes for fans of Tales. And if you were put off by Tales of Link, which I hope all of you were, because it was kind of terrible, this one will definitely do it for you.
I will let that slide then. Fair enough. So you can find that out right now. Which brings us to the top spot for everybody. Number one, best game of the year, according to all of us who are in our own heads, objectively correct. Starting with Emily. What is it? Best game of the year?
Well, I think Glenn will agree with me, maybe not for his personal top thing of the year, but just that it's an amazing game anyway, and no one's going to be surprised by it, because it is Breath of the Wild.
Dun, dun, it had dun. To be there on someone's list. It couldn't be on mine, because I still haven't played it. But not probably going to get too many objections, because from a critical standpoint, this is one of the most lauded games I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, and again, this was back when I first bought the Switch back in April. I ordered Breath of the Wild with it as well, and I remember I was specifically talking to my friend Jack, and I was like commenting on every tiny little thing because I wanted to hate it so much. Because I was just like, oh, I'm so unimpressed by the graphics.
You're so... you wanted to hate the Switch, you wanted to hate the game, you just...
I wanted to, because everyone was hyping it up so much. I was like, well, it can't be that good. So I just went across, like, I played about 10 minutes of it. I was like, oh, I don't understand what everyone's talking about. This is so not... this is so not up for it. And then I started... I cooked something in a pot. And I was just done.
And you were away.
I was just done. Because it made me feel like a child again. Like, you know, we've all grown up. We're all gamers growing up, whatever stage and whatever platform you choose. But it's very rare you find a game nowadays that makes you feel the same excitement and wonder that you did back when you were a kid, you know?
It's very true.
And when I was playing Zelda Breath of the Wild, you know, playing through it, there was, like, I was 50, 60 hours in, and I was still discovering things. You know, the first time I got hit by lightning, I shit a brick. blue tits just landed my feeder again.
Him again. He's from the last podcast.
He's probably come back again.
He's our new regular guest now that Glenn's leaving.
He is. But because I sort of saw that I had, a metal shield on or something, and I saw, like, it started to spark, and I'd been in lightning storms before, and I was like, oh, this is so peculiar, I wonder what's happening. And then, bang! You know, I just got fried.
It's a nice touch.
And it was just, so many teeny little details that, you know, it makes all the difference, like crickets hiding in the grass, and all that sort of stuff, all the different quests, and all the different people you can talk to, and the arrangement you can do everything in. Like, I've still not completed the game because I don't want to.
Yeah, we discussed that as well, but just the idea that Nintendo came out and basically did an open world, a properly like open world game in the style of something like a GTA or a Fallout or whatever it might be, and from all the reports and everything I've heard, everyone just says they like simultaneously reinvented it and nailed it first time out.
Yeah, they really have. And I think it's the way they've kind of packaged it all and the way that they've sort of laid it out for you. Like, I wasn't a massive fan of open world games anyway. I get kind of bored in them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fact that they give you that opening period where you've got to try and get all of your, your abilities, like the bombs and the magnetic thing and all that. I don't know if I didn't, like, having those kind of base abilities, but then just letting you kind of build up your stamina and health and your weapons, I think kind of made it for me because at least you've got something.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter that your weapons are crappy.
Right, you have those core abilities to prime
as you go along. And that there's just so many different ways. Like, I mean, I've been a regular on the Switch Reddit page for months now. But there's so many different ways to complete each task.
Oh, really?
Like, it's just really random. Like, you can just... There's obviously a specific path you're supposed to take.
Mm-hmm.
But on occasion, like, on the shrines and things, I've seen people just sort of, like, cheat the system. And, like, you know, when people have been freezing the logs and, like, hitting them to make it, like, to build up momentum and then standing on them and they just get thrown across the map.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. This lets you be creative.
That's nice.
It's about as non-linear as you could possibly get.
See, I've had to listen to all of this awesome stuff all year while never being able to play it because I can't afford a Switch at the minute. Justify getting one anyway. So it's just sad. I think you would agree with most of this, wouldn't you, Glenn? You're a big fan of it.
Yeah, I loved it. I don't know. I in hindsight, I've kind of like missed the classic Zelda games a little bit more than I thought I would, but I still love it for what it is. And it is, like Emily said, it's just the complete opposite of a linear experience. It's just it's shamefully non-linear. It wants you to just get lost,
and that's kind of nice because you know, the world is a hellscape, so I'd like to dive into a new one, which is fun and exciting and has pretty sunsets. That's what I'm enjoying so much. I'm nearly finished The Witcher and trying to not finish it, but that's got some incredible sunsets. Beautiful looking thing. And I've seen a lot of lovely picturesque stuff from Breath of the Wild as well, just in the videos and the screenshots. So yeah, surprise to no one, but yes, it has hit us, one of our top lists at number one. So doesn't need any push from us, really. No, don't you see? Go and get it now, because everyone is already on it. So that's fine. All right, I'm going to do mine. So this is a mixture of, like, similar to Goragoa, where it came out of nowhere. I wasn't expecting it. I had no preconceptions. I played it and I went, oh, actually, this has got hidden layers of brilliance that everyone else seems to have ignored because they're wrong. Datawing. Datawing is the best game that we didn't review on Pocket Gamer. Outrageous. I think it came out at a funny, weird time when loads of other things were coming out. It was a free game, so it wasn't, you know, we often focus a lot on premium stuff as priority for reviews because people need advice on what to buy, obviously. Whereas if it's free, people can just go ahead and download it. And this was free, and it's completely free with no in-app purchase or anything. It's created by one of the guys from Halfbrick, who, you know, worked on Fruit Ninja and everything. So I guess he has the capacity to be able to just make a game for free and release it as a pet project. And not need to get lots of financial recuperation because, you know, Fruit Ninja and stuff and Jetpack Joyride, those games do okay. So he released this thing, which is an amazing kind of, it buries the lead and it subverts what you think it is, because when you play it at the beginning, you think it's a kind of retro-themed racing game where you're just a little arrow on the screen that looks like it's been ripped straight from Asteroids. And you're racing around a track, which is just a pair of white lines, and you're staying within the lines. And you have to accelerate by scooting really close to the edge of the barriers. And sort of your thruster at the back, when you come near one of the edges of the track, will kind of go, and it'll accelerate off of it. Whereas if you just drift down the middle, you'll just slow down. So it encourages you to take the corners and go right up to the edge, but not quite, because if you hit the edge, you'll stop, but just on the edge, and it feels like surfing. And it's got a lovely, like, pull and push momentum to it that's really satisfying. So you're like, this is clever. And then it starts to add wrinkles where instead of it being a top-down racing track, like you're playing Micro Machines or something, you suddenly start to realize there's gravity. So you're like, actually, this racing track isn't drawn on a table. This racing track is drawn on a wall. And you're moving up the wall and up the racetrack. And so you have to get more momentum to get up that corner, because otherwise you'll go and just fall back down again and start going back down the track. And you're like, oh, that's interesting. And then the thing underneath it all is this meta narrative. There's this, like, emote which keeps popping up, this little emoji character, this winky face. She's like, hello, you're my data wing, and I want you to transmit data from here to there. You're like, all right. And so by completing the race, you're transmitting data, you're sending a packet. And it becomes increasingly clear that this character is not quite who he says he is. And then another character pops up out of nowhere and it's like, hi. And like, right, who are you and where did you come from? And like, almost like the system's been hacked. And then it starts talking about things relating to the device you're actually playing it on. And it's really clever. It was such a lovely surprise where it was kind of tripping me up every 5 or 10 minutes. And upsetting my expectation of what I think this game is at every stage. And I won't spoil it, but it's a really smart and clever thing. And they've got the music just right. It's got that kind of synth wave 80s haze stuff going on, but it does it well, not in a naff way. It's funny and charming and almost a bit sad at times. And just the basic mechanic of this weird kind of vertically scaling racing surf thing is really unique and something I haven't seen before. So we just managed to package it all together in just a beautiful little thing that, again, you could play it as a racing game on another platform, but the mechanics of the plot mean that it should be on mobile. You should play it on a phone, because that's kind of integral to what's going on. So it's quite unlike anything else I've played. And, game of the year that we didn't review.
Yeah, I remember actually playing it when it first launched, and I found it really cool and fun. But I didn't get to that stage you did where the second guy comes in. So I don't think I saw it for what it really was. So I'm going to get back to it.
And it takes a while after that before you start getting deep into what's going on. So yes, on the surface, you might think you know what it is, but push deeper, there's much more there. And this is one I can wholeheartedly say, whatever platform you're on, download it for free. You got no ads, you got no in-app purchases. There's literally no reason for you not to do it, even if you don't like free-to-play games. It's the coolest thing. So shout out to Datawing for being great.
Awesome.
Glenn.
Hello.
Number one.
Yes.
2017. What you got for us?
I really feel bad for leaving it on such a bad note, but I'm going to go for it. My top game of the year was Idle Pouring. Yeah. I'm sorry.
This is what you'll be remembered for now, though.
Yeah. I mean, I think I started with a bang by, you know, naming that jousting game by Gameloft as my favourite game of 2014, I think it was. So people know, I think, if they followed my career, that I don't have the best taste.
You're going to kill me. I've still got a bad throat and a cough, and you're going to make me cough laughing at your bad games, Glenn.
I'm going to really try and justify this one. And I'm probably going to fail, but, you know, whatever. I love this game. I genuinely loved it. It came out a couple of months ago, not long ago. And it's basically have you ever heard of, what's it called? I can do this. It's Ragnarok Online.
I recognize the font. So yeah. Yes, I have seen it in videos.
Yes, basically it's a PC MMORPG that was intensely popular about 10 years ago. It was an Asian themed one. Asian themed, I meant to say anime themed. Anime themed and based on sort of Norse mythology. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really popular, like intensely popular. And they've recently started dipping their toes into mobile. They've had a couple of games before this which didn't really take off. Like they tried porting the entire experience into mobile, and it didn't, as far as I'm aware, it didn't really do much, at least over here, because you know, no one talks about it, even though it's really big on PC. And this time they did something slightly differently, and they've essentially turned what makes an MMORPG great into a clicker. And it really works. Like, right. For mobile. Yeah. So you do everything you would on an MMORPG. You grind enemies, which is, well, an Asian one. All MMOs aren't the same, but like in Asian MMOs, you spend most of your time just battling monsters. And then and just to level up, you grind out the level, you grind out XP, and then you monsters drop gear, which you equip, and then you sort of level up the gear itself by getting these upgrade stones and stuff. This probably all sounds horrible to you, but to an addict like me, who absolutely, you know, I'm helpless when it comes to that stuff. I grew up with I didn't grow up in a poor family, but I didn't tend to buy an awful lot of games. And I had a PC, so when I grew up, I used to play free to play PC MMOs because it was an easy way to sort of get lots of new games all the time. And I used to get addicted to them.
So I guess there's an element of comfort food in it for you.
Yeah, it's definitely comfort food. I know they're bad, and sometimes I have to like literally uninstall them from my devices because I'm like, this isn't healthy. You're not actually enjoying this. You're just addicted. So I understand that, but I do think you know, idle pouring does something very, very smart. In that it doesn't try and just force a massive, because MMOs, like, massive is in the word. They're it massive is, experiences. Is. They have an enormous world. There's loads of content. There's so much to do, and so many have tried to put it on mobile, but it's just never been quite comfortable. I really liked Order in Chaos. It just basically put a WoW on mobile World of Warcraft, and it was a good effort. But it's just not really what I want. Like I don't want to. With mobile, I'm a lot more impatient than when I'm on a PC because I'm usually out and about and I've usually got like 30 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes to play. So I don't really want to run halfway across a map to kill a more powerful monster. I kind of want a lot of that stuff to be automated. And so a lot of MMOs to solve that have like MU Origin, which came out last year. They've sort of automated the process. So you sit basically and watch the guy do all the work in the fighting for you, and you just basically manage the experience. You go in and equip the better gear as he finds it. You level up the skills, you level up the gear, you do all the sort of management. And that was a positive move because, like, again, might not sound so tempting to you, but just the pure fact that this guy's getting stronger is kind of enough to feed my addiction.
Watching the number go up. To clarify, I'm looking at the Google Play listing for RO: idle pouring at the minute. Yes. And the thing they have on the front of it here is 100% automatic battle level up, even sleeping.
Yes, that pretty much sums it up.
That's what we're talking about here, the games that play themselves.
Yes, but this one is really clever. Like, when you dig into what it's doing, it is clever because it has literally everything, like I said, you do in an MMO is there, but it's just completely tailored around this, the mobile experience. So your enemy is constantly running across a plane, like a 3D plane, running into monsters, killing them, moving on to the next one. And every few monsters you kill, like a clicker, you reach a boss level, you kill it, you move on to a higher level of plane. and the 3D environments in the background change depending on what level you get back to. So you do get this feeling that you're exploring a world, and progressing. But everything is just so streamlined. Like, you don't just level up one piece of gear. So in a traditional MMO, you level up your jumper to be like plus 10, right? And it'd be really difficult to do, really expensive, and then at some point you'd find another jumper and you'd swap to that, and all that progress is just sort of like gone. You can't.
Do you mean jumper as in like a sweater?
Yes, sorry, yeah. We're English, aren't we? So we should, for our American audience, we should clarify. So your sweater.
I'm just liking the idea that your characters in your MMOs, they're not wearing armor and chainmail and plate mail. They're wearing hoodies.
Yeah, often, honestly, that's not uncommon. So, yeah, a helmet or a sword or whatever, you level it up to plus 10 or plus 20 or whatever. In this game, you level up that gear slot. So, and once you hit that the level cap for that gear slot, you don't have to do it ever again. Every piece of gear you put in there instantly gets leveled up to plus 10. So that was a streamlining for mobile, which is great.
Okay.
You get there's a quite a smart skill system as well, where you have between 4 and 5 skill slots that, and you unlock a shit ton of skills, so you can constantly change it, and you just put them in order of the way you want them sort of like released by your character. And this is where it gets good, bit right, because the boss battles and
I was waiting for when it got good.
The boss battles and the PvP system, you can see what skills your enemy is going to use against you. So it's kind of like you kind of like you're preempting that and countering their skills to defeat them. So if you know an enemy is going to do like a super powerful attack that has a really big build up, you can just use an interrupt ability that'll just prevent them from using it. And then you can counter with your own powerful attack.
So you can play the fights yourselves then?
Yeah.
You don't
like do anything. You just watch it, but you control the order in which your hero uses his skills. And that's highly strategic. When you get to high level PvP, you really have to understand what you're doing, and you have to figure out the exact timing pattern, because some skills are a little bit quicker than other skills at unleashing. So you know you can so you go, right, I can get that skill out before that skill and completely counter what he's trying to do. And it gets really, and some of the builds people are coming up with are incredible. Like, it really does take a lot of thought. And then on top of that,
there is, at least in PvP, there is interactive play there.
Yeah, and you can attach runes to skills as well, which offer different properties. Like, for example, you might have a skill where you attack them and it heals you, and you can add a rune on it which will heal you in further. So you get like double heal from that skill. Or skills that sort of daze the enemy when you use them. So you can turn like a normal attack into an interrupt.
Yeah.
And it's just, there's so much depth to it. Your character, you have to, because like, you know, like in a usual clicker, you reset your progress after a certain level in exchange for this currency that are usually called relics, which give you like more power. So the next time it's faster, and you get a little bit further in the game. And again, they've done some
kind of
smart
prestiging, and then you go back and start again.
There's kind of like 10 prestige levels in this. But the best thing about this game is that every single time you prestige, you unlock a new system in the game as well. It's not just you'll do this all faster. You unlock a new system, and it's always something really cool. Like the second prestige I got to was a new class which had a really powerful skill, and it had a really cool like appearance. So you were really really wanted to get in there and see what it looked like. And then the third one was a combat pet, which would join you and fight with alongside you. And then you had all their skills to add into the equation. So it just kept getting deeper and deeper. And like I said, it felt like I was playing a PC MMO from back in the day. I was thinking about what my character build would be. I was trying to make him look cool and get costume items and stuff to outfit him. But it was really doing is I was just watching a guy running across a 3D plane battling enemies endlessly. And it just captured all of what I love about the genre.
That is very much your jam, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah. I'm boring. Give me more of that.
I like the idea that one of the games you've spoken most about here is a game that plays itself.
Yeah. That says a lot about me.
But yeah, Breath of the Wild is fine and everything, but have you seen this game?
Yeah.
You just watch it and the numbers go up, you don't do anything, it's brilliant.
I know, but like, as I've got older, I don't think it's an age thing, but I genuinely have started to like favour games that do a lot of the work for you. And I know that sounds incredibly lazy, but I really do enjoy that. Like,
well,
that's a lot of what I play on mobile now is games that play themselves. And I totally understand what people see in it.
the heart wants what it wants, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm lazy. Yes,
and your tortured childhood there, which I'm going to describe it as a tortured childhood, clearly that has an impact on it. So, you know, I'm beginning to understand why. Only now as you leave that I begin to fully understand you, Glenn.
Yeah, you finally got it. I finally revealed the truth.
There you go. So in the app stores, it's listed as RO:idle pouring. And it's got like 60,000 4 and 5 star reviews. So you're not alone, obviously.
Yeah. Again, like I just want to say, like, take it with a pinch of salt. I'm not saying that this game is like everyone's going to love it. I'm just saying if you're one of those specific people that like a specific thing, which is an MMORPG.
Oh, don't worry. You'll like it. I think everyone will be taking it with several bagfuls of
I really
salt.
Hope so.
They'll be salting the earth, salting the roads with the salt.
I don't want people to go, I'll download Breath of the Wild. Oh, wow, this is amazing. I'll try Data Wing. Oh, wow, this is really cool. And then go, I'll try Idle Pouring. And then they're like, oh, shit. What went wrong here?
Just we enjoy listened it to it Glenn. Is. That was our first mistake.
Yes, exactly.
No, because you're obviously not alone, and I'm sure a billion more people have played this than Data Wing. So, you know,
it's not possible.
Everything being beloved isn't necessarily bad, though sometimes it is. Right, that's kind of it, I think, for the year and for all of our top threes. And we're all right in our own special way, except Glenn, obviously.
Yeah.
And you can find out a more expansive list, top fives from all of the PG staff members, which are all going up on PG over on the main site. So your John Mondays and your Harry Slaters and all that. They've all got their own top five lists as well as M's and Glenn's. And then there is the top 25 official proper best games of the year. So go and see that when it is released just before Christmas, over Christmas, going up any time now, in fact. And I guess this is our time to say, have a good Christmas or happy Hanukkah or whatever it is that you celebrate. Go and enjoy it and the time off that often comes with it. I hope you get all the cool games that you want for Christmas. RO Idle Pouring, for example.
Oh, God. Actually, and, you know, there is a way you can kind of get some games for free from us.
There is.
I was going to say
from the Pokémon Advent Calendar.
Yeah, the reason we're publishing our top 25 games after Christmas is because we've been running an advent calendar where you get one of our what we consider the best games of the year for free each day up until Christmas Eve. There's not many days left, but
you've got a couple of days.
But not all the codes have been shipped yet. So have a look at what we've thrown up and what we've got a few exciting games coming up because obviously the best games are the last one. So just keep trying. Get over there on PG and get yourself a free game for Christmas.
Yeah. Get entered, because they're all good stuff.
Absolutely.
And I guess this is also a Merry Christmas to the both of you and a fond farewell to the Glen.
Yes, Glen, I will miss this place terribly.
It's been real.
It has been real, James. And you, Evan.
Apart from the bits that were in the virtual
well.
World.
Yes, those bits weren't quite so real, but the rest was great and real.
It's weird. I get nostalgic for the changing of the guard.
I know.
Whenever this happens, but
yeah.
Oh man.
But I mean, just to on a positive note, they're working on hiring a new editor, and I'm sure they'll be announced to everyone in January. So there are bright times ahead for PG. We're leaving it in comfortable hands for now. You know, you got still James around,
indeed.
Still Harry, still Emily, still John. So don't panic.
Yeah,
all going to be well.
You're stuck with us for a bit at least.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you for listening to us all the way through 2017. If you have, we really, really appreciate it. The numbers have gone up this year, so there are some new people who've turned up. So thank you. Hope you like the whole new interview thing and all that business. And I've enjoyed it. And we are going to be seeing you bright and early in the first week of January, back with the new podcast. So do join us then. And from me, have a good Christmassy thing. And love you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.